So it is Thanksgiving week, and that is the week that every year we revisit the theme of gratitude. It fits in with a larger theme that we're exploring, been for several months, and I've just kind of titled it the Yoga Poses of the Soul, and gratitude is one of them. It's a practice, it's a posture that awakens us to the indwelling divine. So we'll talk about it today. We do that every year around on this week. And then maybe we'll have a couple more weeks in which we talk about it, because there's a few things that I couldn't fit in today. Let's begin reading these words that are inspired by an ancient psalm. Let us be grateful together. Now, you see that it's in italics, so when we get to that, then you're going to read that part with me. We're going to read that together, all right? The divine is in and of us. The divine is in and of everything. And the divine is good. Let us be grateful together. And love always will be. Let us be grateful together. The rains water the earth. Earth's creatures are fed each day. And we too are sustained by rain and soil. Let us be grateful together. The earth is full of wonders. The heavens are majestic. The sun governs the day. The moon and stars govern the night. Let us be grateful together. Once oppressed, we are now free. Once wandering the wilderness, we now have a home. Once strangers and aliens, we now have a place we belong. Let us be grateful together. When we were down, the love of God did not quit us. Even when we were trampled underfoot, we were not forgotten. Let us be grateful together. So that psalm is the record of an ancient worship service. The community gathered together to sing together. The cantor would sing the verses, and then the people would sing the refrain back again and again. Let us be grateful together. As we remember the creation we live in, let us be grateful together. As we remember that once we did not belong, but now we do, let us be grateful together. As we remember how our history has stamped us with purpose and meaning, let us be grateful together. Gratitude. I read a story of a flight from Cabo San Lucas to Los Angeles that was delayed unexpectedly without any explanation for 2 hours, and the people were fussy. And then after 2 hours, the flight was just again, without explanation, canceled. And again, the people were fussy. And as everybody was waiting in line to redo their travel plans and to reconfigure how they were going to get home, all that negotiating filled the room with fussiness. And then, after all the flights were rebooked, quietness descended upon the lobby of the airport, and then complaining began. And there were children complaining, and there were adults complaining. And in that context, a plane arrived. The wheels were put up to the stairs were put up to the side of the plane. The people disembarked, and they put their hands up in triumph. Some who got down to the bottom of the stairs kissed the ground. Well, apparently, the plane's flaps had stuck in the wrong position, and the pilot had prepared the passengers for the possibility that they were going to run off the end of the runway. And so fire crews were prepared for a fiery crash, and when the plane didn't crash, well, you can imagine their relief. And the storyteller was struck by the juxtaposition of those two groups. One group, totally oblivious to life's preciousness, derailed by something as mundane as upset travel plans, and the other group keenly aware of their gratitude for life. Now, before we get too hard on the people who were inside the airport, we have to realize this is kind of how our brains are wired. Our brains are wired to have a negativity bias. It's what kept us surviving and what kept us alive, because if we could spot danger or spot trouble or see it, we could avoid danger and avoid trouble, and therefore we survived and we passed our genes on. So you and I are the carriers of generation after generation of people who were able to spot trouble and to focus on hardship and to try to avoid it. So consequently, when our brains are just going through everyday life, troubles and hardship and pain, these get banner headlines in our attention. And daily blessings show up somewhere below the fold. So, to challenge that bias, the spiritual tradition has long encouraged us to bring intentionality to our gratitude, to make a gratitude plan. Because it isn't going to happen by default, so we have to plan for it to happen. This psalm preserves one of the ancient religious services that did that for us, that said, okay, people, let's gather for the very purpose of thankfulness. Several years ago, I read a sermon by a guy, his name was William Sangster. He gave that sermon about 100 years ago, and I thought the outline was great. The content I've redone, but the outline was wonderful. And so we're going to follow that outline this morning. The title of the sermon was Count Your Blessings. Roman numeral 1 was Common Blessings Usually Overlooked, 2, Special Blessings Soon Forgotten, and 3, Greatest Blessings Tragically Ignored. Well, I thought it was a good outline, and so I've put different content into it. But let's do that together today. Let's count our blessings. So in the seat back in front of you, there is a piece of paper in that envelope. So if you would go ahead and get yourself some paper, or if you've got your own paper, there should be a pen there as well. You're going to need that. Let's start with number 1, common blessings usually overlooked. So I woke up really early yesterday, so I came down. I've got a little treadmill desk over in that nice closet thing that we call an office, and so I'm down there, it's like 5:15 in the morning, and I'm thinking to myself, you know what, I've got a whole bunch of things in my head, but let me see what's in other people's heads. So I sent a bunch of texts to people that I thought would love me even after I sent them a text at 5:30 in the morning. And so I said, so what are you grateful for? I'm getting my lesson ready for tomorrow, and the whole, to their credit, a lot of them responded. So here are a few of the texts that I got back. Several people were grateful for the gift of laughter. One said, my wife, she makes me laugh, and she makes our kids laugh, and that is just something I'm very grateful for. Other people said, I have people who laugh with me in my life, even in, and sometimes especially during, the tough times, something for which I'm very grateful. Another was probably still in bed when the text went out, which might inform, I have a really comfortable bed, and I'm grateful for that. And I have a very warm shower. And as it's getting colder, I really appreciate both of those. One person said, I have a job, I've always had a job, that has provided me with health care. But as our nation is grappling with this thorny issue, and I hear the stories of people who haven't always had health care, I am very grateful for something that I used to take for granted. Along those same lines, one person wrote back, I kind of took college for granted, and I graduated without debt. But hearing the stories of what's happening to kids these days, I both feel for them, but I'm also very grateful for the access that I had to college. Common blessings usually overlooked. Another said, I am grateful for spiritual friends who push me. I appreciate that they see the best in me, sometimes even when I don't see the best in me, but also they don't let me get away with my usual crap, and I appreciate that. Several were grateful for very simple things. One was really grateful for the New York Times crossword puzzle on Sunday. Another was grateful that his wife is a very good cook. One was grateful that his son is in the same career that he is, so they can have some shop talk. Feels like it's bonded them together. One person was grateful for kombucha. I'm grateful for kombucha. Now, if you don't know what it is, I had to go look it up. It is a fermented drink, and it's got probiotics, and it sounds really healthy. Ugh. I bet it's good. One person replied, beer, coffee, and boneless chicken thighs. In that order. One person said, I am grateful for how my body works. My body breathes freely, and my body moves freely, and it carries me where I want to go. I don't know the context in which this applied. We've certainly talked about it a lot in lessons, but one person said, I am grateful for dopamine. I don't know what that means. Several were grateful for the necessities of life. My job pays our bills. My business pays our bills and then some. I am grateful for my apartment. I'm grateful for my house. My car is reliable. And that wasn't true this time last year. I am very grateful for that. Several were grateful for their pets. My dog, she just makes me happy. Now that is a very simple exercise. We remember, we intentionally draw up common blessings, usually overlooked. But it is an exercise that, for all its simplicity, has a tremendous capacity to transform us. Now, in past Thanksgiving lessons, I have spoken about how gratitude will rewire our brains, will affect the very biology of our brain-body response. It also alerts us to purpose. It gives us access to meaning. It enhances the experiences of life's goodness. So a simple, small practice, like a weekly gratitude journal or a monthly gratitude journal, remembering common blessings usually overlooked. After I got all those replies back, I went back into my examine journal from several years ago. And I, at that time, I can remember the chair, but I can't remember the experience. We had an overstuffed chair that we used to have in our old house, and I was very grateful, I think it was like 2006 or 2007, to have had the experience of sitting in that chair with one of my children, and that comfort and warmth, that was something I was very grateful for. A year or two later, I was grateful for having had a meaningful conversation with one of my children. I was grateful that our community survived the 2008 financial crisis, which was not a sure thing, because it was about that time that I started talking this crazy heresy stuff, and then the financial crisis, and oh my goodness, how are we going to pay the bills? Common blessings usually overlooked. But this week, we intentionally and we purposely look for them. So I'm going to give you about 45 seconds to take that piece of paper in front of you and to write down common blessings usually overlooked. Now, it's not really an exercise. It can be done in 45 seconds. So either turn the page over and leave yourself some room, or go down a ways and leave some room so that you can fill in more later. Number two, special blessings soon forgotten. When I was in graduate school, I was deeply depressed. For part of that time, I was suicide depressed. And last Friday, a company that I worked for during those years set a phone appointment with me. They called me from Colorado because they're writing a history of the company, and it appears I figured prominently in the early years of the company. It was an adventure company that did whitewater rafting and kayaking and backpacking and mountaineering and rock climbing. So they were interviewing people, putting together this history, and so I sat on the phone for an hour, and I told about my experience while I was there. I don't think they knew, because they didn't know me in other contexts, that I was depressed during all the years that I was working there. But as I worked through what had been my experience and the things that I did and the things that happened in me and for me, the phone interview reminded me of a special blessing. In fact, three special blessings, the kind soon forgotten. One of the owners of that company, her name is Lindy Chickowitz. I don't know that she knew I was struggling with the severity of depression that I was, but she knew that I was hurting at the time. I don't think she understood much about the psychology of depression or how what are the best treatments of depression. None of the people on my special blessings list did. But what she did was engage me in the midst of this time when I wanted to disengage. And she created space for me to be where I was, but not be alone. She created a space in which I could be cast down, but not forsaken. That's some Bible right there, people. Yeah, I know how to use it. Cast down, but not forsaken. Cast down, but not alone. She didn't know what to say. She didn't know what to do, but she stood with me. And she asked after my well-being. And she told me about her life as she asked me about mine. And she accepted me in that space. After I got off the phone call, I remembered that experience, and I realized what she did in many ways was to say, you might be going down, but you're not going to go down alone. And I'm going to stand here to do my best to make sure that you don't go down for the third time. So, reflecting on that interview that they had with me, I remembered two other special blessings. One was a roommate during those years. His name was Phil Eisenhower, and he was very dear to me in a time of great need. At the time, we were all students, and we were all broke. And during some particularly dark days in my life, Phil would, with certain regularity, say, come on, Doug, let's go get some food. I'm paying. And I thought, depression? Free food? I'll do depression tomorrow. We'll go get some free food. It was the same thing. He didn't know what to say. He didn't know what to do in this dark place that I was. But he stood with me so that I was not alone. And in many ways, I think the times when I was suicidal were mitigated by Phil Eisenhower. The third was a professor. As many of us have, I was losing my religion during those graduate school years. But it wasn't for me just my religion that had stopped working. In many ways, the whole world had stopped working because I had rooted so much of my world in a religious framework, a religious context. And so for a whole semester, this professor, his name was Dr. Sherbrin, he stood with me in the darkness. I had a class with him on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 6 to 9. And after the class was over, he would take me out to Bob's Big Boy Burger Shop, and he would listen as I would say all kinds of inflammatory things about religion, his job, you know. I would point out some way or another in which this point of religion was a sack of manure, this point of religion was a sack of manure. I did not use the word manure. And I would say these very inflammatory things, and then he would just listen. And then he'd tell me back what he heard me say, and then we would talk about the thing, whatever was the thing that I was angry about. And he would give some historical context, and he would give some biblical context. He'd give some broader context. But what he really did was try his best to help me access the thing under the thing, what was driving my internal dissonance. And he framed for me, the answer isn't going to be here with this thing, or this thing, or this thing, or this thing. The answer is going to be in what is driving all of those things. Now, together, we were never able to access that. That didn't happen for me for another few years. But as Lindy did, as Phil did, Dr. Sherbrin stood with me in the darkness and would say, in essence, I don't have an answer for you, but while you're searching, I will stand with you. So yesterday, I was writing this lesson, and I remembered those three special blessings, and I remembered them with deep gratitude. Special blessings soon forgotten. And I bet you've had special blessings in your life also soon forgotten. So this time, I'm going to give you 60 seconds. And so you can jot those down. Go ahead and go. Now my plan is, as soon as today's lesson is posted on the website, is to send a link to both Phil and Lindy. I can't find Dr. Sherbrin. I spent a lot of the day yesterday poking around trying to find where he's a professor now. I can't find that. And who knows? He was older than me. My God, I am. Maybe he's dead. Third, God's greatest blessings, tragically ignored. Several of the responses that I got to my early morning texts spoke of the spiritual life and the context in which the spiritual life unfolds, spiritual community, spiritual friendship. Maybe they focused that way because it was the preacher guy who was doing the asking, but nevertheless, they seemed really poignant, and here's what they said. One person said, "I really love that my spiritual journey works. That has not always been the case. I really love that those abstract words that we use, like aware of the indwelling divine or desire and pay attention, I love that those abstract words are becoming real experiences in my life. My religion isn't secondhand anymore. It has become a firsthand, very real thing." I was glad for that. Others spoke of their gratitude for finding people to share the spiritual journey with, people that they could help along the journey and be helped by on the journey. One said, "I am so grateful for people who are helping me be faithful to my contemplative practice." Another said, "I am so grateful for people who are helping me as I go through this dismantling process of my old kind of toxic religious instincts." One said, "Together, I'm able to move greater and greater aspects of my life into this religious freedom." And finally, a person said, "I really love to have people around me helping me be able to make a difference in the world in ways that are here, now, and small and doable." One man spoke of his gratitude for how purposeful we are as a community in working toward interdependence. He said, "School and work and family, these were all places that I could work on common goals, but being part of this community, we've created this narrative in which the interdependence, our connectedness to each other, is kind of the ideal in which the spiritual journey goes. In other words, if we don't have interdependence, then the other things can't unfold." And he said that we have made that a centerpiece of our life. I am deeply grateful because it has become foundational in my own life. And one of the responses, perhaps because of my own dark times, really connected with me. A person said, "It used to be I wasn't particularly grateful for life itself. My pain felt overwhelming. My troubles crowded out my awareness of my attention to life's beauty or life's goodness. But this spiritual journey has completely turned that around. I still have pain and I still have troubles, but this shift in my life, in my soul, has made it possible for me to be grateful just to be alive, grateful to just get to experience this wild ride." So this thing, a service of thanksgiving, communities have been doing this for thousands of years. And one of the things they look for is the greatest blessings, tragically ignored. The greatest blessing, the divine is in you, the divine is in me. Let us remember that. Let us see that. That oneness is awakening in us as a greater reality than two-ness. As far back as 7,000 years ago, we came together for Thanksgiving celebrations, times to bring our words of gratitude and bring our offerings of gratitude and to feast together on those offerings and to remind one another of our many blessings and to help one another awaken to the richness that is this life in the divine. Because that's what gratitude does. It awakens us to deeper experiences of that which always is. You are always, I am always in the divine, and the divine is in us. But so many things, the default mechanism of our brain is to take so many things for granted. We get distracted from goodness. We get distracted from truth and beauty and life so easily, even when those things are right in front of us. So the tradition encourages us to gather and to stir one another to intentional, purposeful gratitude, and in so doing, to reframe our perceptions of our lives and to sensitize us to the gentle interior movement of the divine, and to sensitize us to the blessings of the divine that are ever present. So today we join our forebears, bringing intentionality to our gratitude. So I'll give you another 60 seconds to jot down those ways in which awakening to the indwelling divine, the spiritual life, the spiritual journey, enriches your days, lights your way. We are fortunate at this time in human experience to be the recipients of a tremendous amount of research that has gone into the mechanics behind our ancient spiritual traditions. As you've been hearing me talk about many times, this new wing of psychology that began 25, 30 years ago, positive psychology, looking at what is it that makes human beings thrive. As opposed to looking at the things that makes us unhealthy, let's look at the lives that are healthy. And in one of those classes, the theme of gratitude featured prominently, and the professor invited his students to every semester gratitude night. So they prepared all semester for that night so that each student showed up bringing some aspect of thankfulness along with. And so every year when the review of the class and the professor was filled out by all the students, it was regularly a high point for the students, not just for that class that they had had, but for many of them, this was the highlight of their whole college career, this night of gratitude. And repeatedly, when they were talking about it in their reviews, the word that came up again and again was transcendent. That's not the kind of word that usually shows up in academic settings. But transcendent speaks to this thing inside of us that is hungry to experience life beyond the limits of our everydayness. Or it's a proxy word for the divine, or a proxy word for the supreme reality, or some such thing. These words that can't be used in an academic setting as freely, but we're talking about that which is beyond us, an experience beyond the limits of our daily life, transcendent, an experience of the supreme nature, transcendent. So gratitude awakens us, in a religious context or not a religious context, to access that which is bigger than the reality of everydayness. And so today we have a service of intentional gratitude. You have on your papers before you the result of intentional gratitude. But maybe this year it might be a good idea to start a gratitude journal. Maybe once a month, or maybe once a week, maybe daily for a while, and then revert back to say that for which I am grateful. I have done that for many years. Gratitude is not a cultural norm for us, and our brains have a negativity bias. So when we begin to do this kind of thing, there are headwinds that push against it. There's a whole lot of us that will just dismiss it out of hand. But here's the thing. This is something for a little bit of effort that returns a tremendous amount of benefit. This effort of bringing ourselves to this action returns something that is transformative in our lives. So the simplicity of a gratitude list, that's not a bad idea. It's been part of the spiritual tradition from the beginning. There is something powerful to it. There is something in it for you. There is something in it for me. And so, indwelling spirit, awakened to life at its deepest, that's our prayer. Awakened to life at its realest and truest, that is our prayer. Awakened to life that we can see beyond our negativity bias. That's our prayer. And may we be stirred to the practice of gratitude, and may we draw benefits from that practice as we follow Jesus. Amen.